You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things U Talk football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the U Talk podcast. This is Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports. Joining me as always is Joseph.
Hey, everybody.
Well, football season for the most part over. So
yeah, I'm going to talk about a bowl game next week, right? But maybe 2 weeks, but not much to talk about there. We got to start talking basketball, which is excellent.
Yes, exactly. Basketball. More my forte, less of Joseph's forte. So we'll see how it goes basketball season for us. To start, though, let's start with our constant segment of Kuzma Watch. And, you know, Kuzma continuing to get, you know, averaging 27 minutes this month, five games in. You know, he had a rough game against Philly, but otherwise, you know, double-digit scoring, double-digit rebounds. I mean,
the New York game was exciting that the Lakers were down three. I think it was 99-96 with less than 20 seconds on the clock, and he nailed a three to tie it and send it to overtime. And then is it Porzingis who's on the
Yes.
The Knicks? Porzingis kind of took the game over in overtime, but it was a clutch play by Kuzma, and he continues to sort of move into that leadership role leadership may be the wrong word, sort of key player, you know, vital.
Yeah, rotation player.
Not the best front runner for Rookie of the Year in Utah news, though, where Donovan Mitchell is taking over the world and the nation by storm. That's been really fun to watch, especially given how the season, the off season went for Jazz fans. So
Enjoying that. Not exactly a Jazz podcast, but it is good to see Donovan Mitchell do well.
You guys all like it, so I'm going to throw it out there. Why not?
But yeah, I mean, look, Kuzma's not getting Rookie of the Year. He's having a great season. He, you know, he's looking good for the Lakers. It'll be really interesting to watch as the season goes on, and the Lakers are, you know, they're planning on being big hitters in the free agent offseason, trying to land. You know, there's the rumor of LeBron going there, and that Paul George has already said that's where he wants to play. So Paul George goes there. Kuzma's looking at some serious minute reductions. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But as of right now, Kuzma continuing solid, steady play.
He definitely has established himself as a force to the degree that he's going to be an NBA basketball player for a long time.
It does at this point, yes. It does appear so. So let's hit the football first. There's been some in-state recruiting news that's noteworthy. People are getting their, as Larry Kuskoviak likes to say, they're getting their undies in a bunch. what's going on, Joseph?
So a couple of events over the last couple of weeks. Cameron Latu, who's a big, big, high-end pass rush prospect who'd been committed to Alabama, verbally committed to Alabama, had an official visit with the Utes, and he canceled it. And the behind-the-scenes buzz seems to be Cam Latu was using the OV to Utah as a way to put pressure on Alabama to kind of put their money where their mouth is, and it worked. They said, look, we're going to let you sign on December 20th. You can come to this school. Your scholarship is good. But you can't take that OV to Utah. He said, all right, I won't, which is fair. I mean, he had an offer to Alabama, and he committed to Alabama. And if the feel was they might not let him sign in December. They might say, well, we're recruiting this guy or this guy. And that if he didn't get to sign in December, he might sign with the Utes because he wouldn't be sure about a scholarship. But that didn't happen. It looks like he's going to sign next week. And then Junior Angelou, who is a four-star offensive line prospect, committed to Texas about 3 days ago. And the Ute boards and social media and all that stuff sort of predictably erupted, concerned about in-state recruiting and Utah not being successful at in-state recruiting. And I got a bunch of numbers here and a lot of stuff, but I want to hear Grant kind of. I want to hear what you have to say first before I start digging around in percentages and decimal points.
Well, yeah, so I don't care. I mean, I've said it before, like football recruiting is just, there's just too many players on a team and too much like things that go on for one player. I mean, granted, you get a Heisman candidate type player to come in the team. Yes, they're going to change your program. But otherwise, I just don't think Utah's to that. Like, I don't see any player coming in here. I mean, I know Tuttle's the, you know, second coming of the most amazing quarterback ever and all this other stuff. But I refuse to get my emotions up and down too much on a high schooler making a decision. And then even more so making a decision going, I say, I'm sorry, if I'm 17, 18, like I'll go back, let me rewind back to my teenagers. And I had a scholarship to go play in multiple places across the country to play a sport I would assume I love, right? So let's say I've got a bunch of nice schools recruiting me to play basketball. Like, wait, so I could go play basketball and live on my own, do my own thing, not live at home, kind of a deal.
You're 17.
Like, I kind of want to get out. I want to get out and see things. Like, I want to get away from the hometown. So I wouldn't be going to Utah either. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'd be going, like, I grew up in Virginia. I would at least, I'd probably be going, like, I'd be considering North Carolina schools. I'd be looking in the Northeast. Like, and then if I was intelligent, I would be looking down Florida, SEC country, just even for basketball.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's just, as a teenager, making a decision to go out of state, like, it just seems like that's just a hard battle to win to get to say that these kids are going to choose an in-state school.
And the numbers absolutely back that up. I did this research in 2015, but there's nothing that's happened since then that changed. I looked at blue chip universities and kind of ruled those out, and I was left with 29 states who got Rivals top 100 kids, and most of them went out of state. 42% went to blue chip schools like Texas, USC, Notre Dame. Another 20% went just somewhere else. Only 38% of these kids stayed in the state. So your odds of getting an in-state kid are roughly 1 in 3.
And then how good are those 38% that's left?
Well, these are elite kids, right?
Oh, these are all elite.
These are the really good players. I think if Utah wanted to control in-state recruiting, they could offer a bunch of the sort of borderline 3-star and 2-star players, and they get a ton of commitments. But the thing is, Utah's got a limited number of scholarships that they can offer. They've got a limited number of scholarships they can accept, and they have a very limited amount of time that they can spend. Sometimes by rule, they can only do so many visits. They can only do so many things. And sometimes just by time, if you're working 100-hour a week, you've only got, you know, so many places that you actually have time to go. And they have to husband those resources really carefully and invest those time and visit resources where you have the highest odds of success. And the numbers just don't back up spending those resources on in-state kids because they go out of state. Just like you were saying, Greg, they don't stay in-state because that's not how 17 and 18-year-old kids behave. If you want to get, there's a section of schools that do better at recruiting in-state talent, but they're not like Utah. The list is Wisconsin, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Nebraska, South Carolina, Clemson, Oregon, Arkansas, Virginia, Missouri, Virginia Tech. Those are prestige, long-term, name-brand programs that haven't recruited at the level of USC or Alabama, but are really good institutions with Power Five championships, with time spent at the number one spot in the AP poll, with hundreds and hundreds of total weeks in the AP poll. And Utah's just not there. They're just not that kind of program yet. And what the numbers suggest is the best thing for Utah to do is to be using sort of free, low-cost resources to recruit in-state players. So things like come over to practice anytime you want. And, you know, you can have tickets to the games. And you can hang out on the sideline. And you can hang out with the kids. And we're going to put up some billboards. We're going to do a social media campaign. All the stuff that Utah's doing. But expending the big-time resources, that Kyle Whittingham's time and the in-home visits and all of that stuff, doesn't make sense. The 2 days that they spend doing that visit to Jalon Johnson's house, that's what made him commit. But if you spend those same 2 days going to, the wide receiver committed to Stanford, same kind of player, elite talent, skill player, perimeter player, it wouldn't have made a difference because he was a Utah kid who didn't want to stay in Utah like most of them. And if you can identify the kid who does, great. But the fact is that kid's probably going to come to Utah whether you expend that extra resource on him or not. And Hunter Latulele is a Utah kid. But all you have to do is say, hey, you've got a scholarship. He's like, oh, great. I want to come to Utah. That's where I've always wanted to go. And spending a bunch of extra resources isn't going to change that. So it's not – I think the thing that fans forget is that they don't have the ability to do every single thing they would like to do for every single athlete they would like to commit. And they have to be really careful about where they put the resources and the numbers – just don't justify spending a ton of resources in the state. It makes more sense to go look at out-of-state recruits where there's a real high concentration of elite athletes who aren't as enamored by blue-chip programs because there's one right next door and they didn't pay any attention to them when they were 16. But here's Utah coming into my house when I'm 16. And that works. And then if they can leverage that talent to win championships and be ranked in the AP poll a bunch, what you'll start to see is that they become that kind of brand name, Wisconsin, Nebraska, South Carolina program that the in-state kids start to come to, and that'll help bring their recruiting to the next level. But there isn't a strategy or a pitch or a tactic that they're not using that they could be using that would have a significant impact, which is frustrating, but that's reality. And I, for one, am really happy to see the coaching staff sort of recognizing that and saying, look, it doesn't matter if the 4-star is from Provo High or Hawaii, we just want a 4-star and we're going to go get them wherever they might come. And they've recognized that recruiting California, Texas, and Florida works better, and that's what they're doing. The last 2 years, they've signed 6 4-star recruits, 83% of them, 5 of them have been out of state. Not coincidentally, those have been the 2 best classes Utah's ever signed. And I think that's going to continue to be the most effective choice for Utah.
Well, I mean, we'll see. I mean, the whole other thing about recruits is, you know, once they've committed, getting them on the field is a whole other thing. And then whether they even pan out. I mean, there's just so much unknown. Yeah. So
you think of each recruit. I mean, recruiting matters, but each recruit doesn't. So it matters that you get a bunch of 4-star recruits every year, and that helps your team be better. But one player doesn't make the difference because a lot of the time you're wrong about these guys. You're essentially saying, I'm going to roll a dice. If it's a 4-star player, he's going to be a good player if I get a 3, a 4, a 5, or a 6. And if he's a 5-star player, 2 through 6, he's a good player. If he's a 3-star player, I've got to roll a 5 or a 6 to get him. So you're getting these good weighted rolls of the dice with the better players, but you don't actually know for sure that Angelau is going to be better than the old lineman from California that Utah is going to get instead. And it's just a numbers game, and people get so focused on this kid or that kid. And I think when they're in state and you get the opportunity to sort of see what they're made of a little bit more, it gets more interesting and more exciting. You sort of buy into the kid a little bit more. But it's important for the coaches to resist that sort of human instinct to like what they've seen more of better than what they haven't seen more of, and to say, well, any 4-star player is just about as good as any other, and it's just about as good of a chance of turning into the kind of player we need to next level the program. And that's exactly what they're doing, and I, you know, defend their strategy on recruiting to the end, because I think they're doing it exactly right.
Okay, so everyone who's got their on using a lot or in a not, time to calm down.
At me on Twitter. I will chat with you about it. I'll show you all my research. I kept it simple here for the voice recording. Nobody wants me to read off tables, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't want you to read off tables either.
No.
But so let's get into basketball because we're in between two in-state quote-unquote rivalry games. I do want to touch on the Utah State game because it comes upon a topic we've been talking about all basketball season. But so Utah State game, Utah, the running Utes open up and just are obliterating Utah State. They got up like 21, I believe, off the top of my head. And the great thing was our guard play on the defensive end was insane in shutting down their guard play and the pick and roll D and whatnot. And we held them down and did a great job. And then in the second half, you know, constant theme of all the coach interviews that are post game are Larry K's, you know, press conference every week is, we then begin to give the other team the opportunity to get back in the game. Now, granted, here's the thing. If I'm up by 21, I've seen it plenty of times playing and even a couple times when I've been coaching a team that's superior, that, you know, players get a little bit comfortable. And that's fine. That's acceptable, right? So there's going to be that phone in. In the end, the Utes come out winning. The funny thing is, it's just a constant conversation about turnovers. And so, look, here's the fact that over like the whole season, the Utes have averaged 13 turnovers a game, right? It's the last, like, I think it was the last five games. It's literally been 13, 13, 13, 16, 11, 13. Like, it's something like along those lines.
Very consistent. It's not like one game they get 30 turnovers. It's
right.
Like they get a lot. It's the way they play. They get a lot of turnovers.
So I don't know whether we need to get a little sound drop, whether it's a ding or something that just signifies us talking about turnovers, because ultimately I feel like we've killed the subject to death.
We're going to hit it.
I just bring it up. And I'll bring it up one more time as I switch over to the upcoming game Saturday.
Got to have fewer turnovers if they want.
Yeah, I mean, Larry K said it again on I think it was both Monday and Tuesday. Look, we're going to go into a hostile environment. Got to take care of the ball. They don't take care of the ball, they'll lose the game. Shocker. However, let's talk about some rivalry game moment things. First of all, the funniest thing that I find to me hitting the news is that July 4th, Nick Emery apparently texted Larry Koskoviak and was sincere, as much as Coach K could understand in a text message. I assume apologizing for what happened. But it's still funny to me. You know, Larry K's still not very comfortable with this rivalry game and is saying this week that he needed some convincing from people above him to reschedule it. But here we are. I'm sure the student section at BYU and the fans are coming up with plenty of safety first and whatnot kind of jokes.
I'm rolling my eyes.
Stop rolling your eyes. I think as Utah fans, we need to embrace this. If I were going to the game as a Utah fan, it's a late game, so I'm choosing not to. I'm going to watch from home and then go roll over and go to sleep in my bed as long as it isn't horrible and I'm fired up. But I would wear my Utah gear and then go to IKEA and buy their $5 like safety vest. The thing's big enough. Put it on. Put hashtag safety first on the back of that thing.
Take it all.
And just take that to the game. Look, this is the thing that's been missing from the rivalry lately. Right? There's too much. I'm seeing way too much 10%er, 5%er jerks out there. People need to learn to have some fun with it. And if that's not Utah fans having a little bit of light on the Utes to lighten the mood a little bit, I don't know what is.
All right.
And all right. So, look, go get your safety vest, maybe a hard helmet.
Some goggles.
Yeah, if they'll let you wear them into them. And be prepared and be safe going to the Utah BYU game at the Marriott Center. Now, it's a late tip, 9 p.m. Maybe a sign about drowsy driving would be appropriate.
Yeah.
I don't know. But do something because, I mean, heck, if you want to buy enough fake money, maybe take a bag of $80,000 in fake cash and willing to hand it out to BYU fans. Be like, hey, here's your 80, here's your portion of our 80,000 cancellation fee. Like, I think people just need to lighten up. Like, we're going down there, we're playing the game. It's going to be awesome. I was down there last time they played in the Marriott Center. It's a great environment of a rivalry game to play. Granted, there was another flagrant too.
Oh, there'll be, more.
And I'm just questioning whether there'll be another one. I mean, here's the thing. Coach K's been talking about we're going to talk to the guys, make sure there's control and everything. But there are two actual basketball-related subjects that I'm ready to talk about when you want.
Yes.
Okay, so first up. My question, I have two questions for this team right now. One, and is the Collette roller coaster going to continue? If he continues his current roller coaster ride that has been this season, and just mainly in points, we should expect, you know, a double-digit scoring game from Collette. An in-state rival that hopefully he's ready to play. However, he's also going against some good talent. Yoli's Child is legit.
He's a good player, man.
And
he's good.
You know, so what are we going to see from Collette? I really like hearing that the coaching staff is trying to get Collette and specifically Jace Johnson to slow down around the hoop and get some points because the Butler game, it was infuriating with how many layups.
Oh, that was killer.
And
that was just hard to watch.
But will the Collette roller coaster continue? That's question number one.
Yes. I'm confident it will because I see a clear trend when he's playing against top-end talent. He just doesn't play well, and he's having trouble. I don't think it's about pace. I think it's about strength and power, and I think he's just getting physically dominated down there by the bigger, stronger players, and he's just not quite big enough. And I think Childs is a pretty special talent and is going to have his way with Collette more or less. That's my prediction. I don't think that's going to be a source of strength for the Utes. Even though I probably think they're going to win the game.
But we're not there yet. We'll get the picks.
Yeah.
So, all right, question number two. So Collette roller coaster continues for Joseph. All right, question number two, and I ask a question to you to guess.
Okay.
On the games you've watched, who would you say are the top minutes played per game for the University of Utah Running Utes?
Collette.
Okay.
Beeler.
Okay.
I have the stats up, so I'm
trying to find out. Well, don't look. Give me like two more players.
Probably Bearfield and Tillman.
Okay. So number one, Justin Bibbins.
Oh,
number two, the player I want to talk about right now, Cedric Bearfield.
That just doesn't make sense right now.
And well, it does. Those are your two starting guards, right? And I'm sorry, the backups, like, they haven't proven that they should be on the floor yet.
Is it crazy to play Tillman instead of Bearfield with Bibbins on the floor?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that's crazy.
Because what I keep coming back to.
Well, maybe that's the case, and we're gonna get to that. So, first of all, here's my whole problem with Bearfield right now. Like, player is – he's good. He's still, you know, got things to go. But as our number two minutes guy, you know, just to go number one, you know, Bibbins, Collette. So, Collette's got our highest per at 27.6. Tillman's at 20, Rawson's at 20, Jace Johnson is at 19, and then you get Bibbins at 17. Cedric Bearfield is at 7. His player efficiency rating is 7 right now, and he's the number 2 minutes. The other problem I have with his play right now is he is at a 1-for-1
yes.
turnover to assist ratio. Like, what did we talk about earlier? Turnovers, right? Like, I mentioned turnovers again. He is the main guy. He's averaging five turnovers a game. And, like, at our least efficient player with the minutes, I mean, I haven't gone and divided it, but efficiency to minutes ratio, he's hands down the least efficient. Like, I want Cedric to step up. Now, You talk about the lineup. Position. You talk about the lineup, and I know you play Tillman, right? Which, you know, I have no argument to that. Tillman's going to awesome, and I'd love to see him on the floor as much as possible. Just one thing I will dampen that with is there will be freshman mistakes. I think we'd be okay with it, but let me get to my point with
his assist to turnover ratio is worse than Barefield. I mean, he's got 6 assists and 13 turnovers, so
yeah.
It's not like he's keeping track of the ball here, but
yeah,
Tillman's, I just think he makes up for it with his scoring efficiency.
Let's go some advanced stats here for you a little bit more. Turnover percentage: Tillman 14.6, Barefield turnover percentage 23.6.
Okay. Yeah.
So as much as you've got those total turnover assist ratio
per possession,
that's things to think about.
A stat I find really important and why I think we should get more to, because you're saying basically what you're saying is Cedric Barefield is one of the least efficient players on the
hands
team,
not even close.
And plays some of the most minutes on the team.
Yep.
And you're saying so he needs to be more efficient, and I'm saying so he needs to play less minutes.
So there's the part of it. Yeah, he should probably play less minutes. However, I also think that there's a part of this is that so I listen to the Jazz. I'm a Jazz fan. I listened to Locked On Jazz, and he was analyzing the starting lineups a couple days ago. And he, in the end, said that ultimately what needs to happen with that starting lineup as he watched the games and whatnot is they just need to play better. It's not that they don't have the skills and abilities to make everything work. I kind of was starting to come to the conclusion with Barefield. Look, he's one of our best guards. Like, I'm sorry.
Last year he was really good.
Exactly. To me, that says maybe Barefield's in a little bit of a slump. Maybe he's forcing things a little bit too much. But he needs – I think the solution is not to bench him. Maybe he shouldn't average 30 minutes a game. Maybe it should come down a little bit. Maybe closer to where Colette is, where Colette is averaging about 20 minutes a game. Maybe that's what Barefield should be at, you know. Give him that extra 10 minutes. Maybe he's a little bit fresher, whatnot. But I don't want to decrease his minutes a ton. I think he is the better option. I think Tillman coming off the bench is where Tillman needs to be right now. And Barefield, I like him. And I think he's much better than this. And in the end of the day, if I were to say bench him or don't start him or whatever, my end solution is a boring one of he just needs to play better.
And that means sometimes not changing anything is exactly the right move. And the temptation is to try and fix things instead of letting sort of the law of averages play out. And I guess we trust that Coach K knows how best to motivate Barefield to play to his maximum potential. Because I agree with you that if you can get Barefield playing to his potential, he should be starting. He should be playing the amount of minutes he's playing. The question is, what do you do when he's not playing to his potential that's either going to help the Utes win ball games or going to motivate him? And I can't say whether or not – I mean, sometimes a guy, you pull him out a couple minutes early in the first half and you put somebody else in, and that motivates him. It's like, oh, I'm losing my spot. I got to – you know, he spends an extra couple hours in the gym working on a shot. But some guys, you say, take the day off, you know, go get yourself an ice cream, like just relax or whatever it is that Barefield likes to do and kind of let go of whatever if he's pressing. And that's just stuff we can't know. And that's why Coach K is the coach and we're the podcaster.
Hey, look, I coach junior jazz.
Oh, man.
First grade. I've got plenty
big
of coaching
time. First grade. Your center is 2'9".
here's the thing. Like, look, we've got 2 more games before Pac-12 conference play begins. BYU being the test, right?
Yeah,
so
next week's game is
what does Barefield do against BYU? And can he step up in what is going to be a great environment to prove oneself and play a good game? And because BYU could be a turning point or we're going to get into Pac-12 play. And if there's one thing I know about Larry Kuskoviac over the years, is that he will give minutes to where minutes are due. And if he doesn't start turning things around, we will see his minutes decrease no matter what, because other players, Pop is, you know, getting healthy and starting to prove himself. Kuskoviac specifically mentioned him, and, you know, he's going to start potentially taking some guard play minutes. And there's a possibility that that's where the minutes go down from for Cedric as the time goes by. But ultimately, I think this game Saturday, which is what we're supposed to be talking about in general, is a big game for Cedric Fairfield.
And I think if I'm right about Collette, I think as go Bearfield, so go the Utes to a large extent. If both Collette and Bearfield have off games, it's really hard for this team to come away with a win against a high-level opponent. BYU's not great, but they're roughly equivalent to where
Utah is. No, they're good. They're good, too.
They're solid. They've got,
I'm not going to discount them at all
right now. I think it's as close to, of course it is, right, because it's Utah-BYU, but I think it's pretty darn close to a dead heat. The metrics that I've been using fairly successfully to evaluate games suggest that it's going to be within a point or two in the closing minutes, and it's just going to be a question of whose shots fall and, critically, who doesn't turn the ball over as you get to those high leverage possessions.
So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, so based on that, what are your thoughts as far as predictions for this game?
I think Utah's going to win. No thanks to Collette, who I don't think is going to have a good game. But I really do think that the players who are underperforming right now, especially Bearfield, are better than they're playing and will do better, even though I wonder if it's not time to start swapping minutes with Tillman and Bearfield or Pop or somebody else. But I think Utah squeaks this one out in the maybe by three.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's a rivalry game. That's the and of all the Pac-12 games on Saturday, it is hands down the one going to get the most. UCLA Cincinnati's on CBS. The Utes are Utah BYU's on ESPN2.
But not eyeballs, you know, on that game.
So I mean, it's late, but you know, I can't. I just don't have the history to predict a BYU win right now. I want to say Utah pulls it out, but I agree with you, going to be a nail biter. I'll say it's going to be like a 5-point game, mainly because there's going to be a couple free throws at the end.
Right, you never.
But that's it. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, I think we're in for a good game. It should be an entertaining game.
When was the last time BYU beat Utah? Basketball.
Basketball? 2012? I think it was not since Jimmer.
Jimmer.
I believe.
They got to get Jimmer. Maybe they got to get Jimmer and the ball kids on the same team.
But
that was so fun.
My God.
The reality show.
That might be the only
Jimmer
place.
Jimmer and the ball kids would be really fun.
Dude, as far as parenting goes, I mean, basketball career-wise, like, those two are not going to be able to play in Europe.
No.
Maybe Israel, but then they're looking, I mean, maybe Japan, because it's Japan's like a lot of shooting. Maybe China, because I mean, that's a lot of shooting.
Defense, yeah.
But like that, but otherwise, like, I just don't. There's a reason the U.S. has the best basketball players in the world. So as much as we know college has an issue with money and playing players to go to schools and whatnot, as far as developing talent in basketball, that is not the problem.
Right.
So
yeah.
Why LeVar Ball...
I mean, the way that you handle this, if you want to build your family empire, right, is you say, all right, I got two kids who are maybe NBA players, one who
really is an NBA player, another one kind of borderline, and then this kid who is not.
But he got a scholarship to UCLA. So you get that UCLA degree, and then he gets a law degree, and he's like the
agent,
guy. That's how you handle building your family empire, so you don't have to pay your lawyers or accountants and things like that. I think insisting that he become a basketball star, and is it Lithuania?
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway,
but either way,
to the point, of Utah BYU on Saturday.
Talking about a tangent.
Right? Wow. Bringing it back home. I picked Utah by 3. Grad has picked Utah by 5. We note that BYU hasn't won in a substantial period of time, which hopefully she'll continue. It's very satisfying.
Anything else to add?
No, I'm good for a go Utes. We'll get out of here.
All right. Well, I will remind you all, look, you know, we both pulled up some stats. Stats are important to us as well. We would love for you to go rate us on
our review stats.
Yeah, go give us some reviews on iTunes and Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you can. It helps the podcast get bigger and more listeners to us. And you know what? If you can't give us a positive review, reach out. Like, let us know. Utalk@gmail.com, Utalk Podcast on Twitter. And, you know, I'm Grant TBS, so it's 2 T's on Twitter. And reach out to us and let us know, because we are all for making this show better and more of what you want to listen to. Outside of that, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to UTalk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UTalk Podcast or email @UTalk@gmail.com.